Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
The MPD is in good hands because the chief has a motto that excellence is transferable. So we know that he is leaving behind a capable leadership team that is ready to serve at the highest levels for MPD.
That's D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser today commenting on the retirement of Police Chief Robert Conti. That information coming out just yesterday. And surprising many. Well, tonight we're going to discuss that and some of the other top issues in the District of Columbia. My guest is D.C. Council Chair Phil Mendelson. He'll answer your questions as well. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mr. Chairman, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
So, looks like D.C. is going to need to find a new chief. When this information first came out, what were your thoughts? What was your reaction?
Well, my first reaction was I was shocked. I didn't expect it at all. My second reaction was we really want our chief to stay longer than a couple of years. We benefited mightily from Kathy Lanier being here 9 years, maybe. Longer tenure is beneficial to us. It's good for the force stability. I've not heard complaints about Robert Conti, so I kind of want to know why it is that he felt it was better to retire. He's got another job. He's going to the FBI. That's what I've been told. I get that, but why would you want to leave to go to the FBI?
Well, today in his press conference, and I don't know whether or not you had a chance to watch it, but he did say that this new position as an assistant director will not be as time consuming. And that it will allow him to, spend more time with his family. He even made the comment about he was not even able to help his son with homework without, interruptions from, the public safety needs of the city. And that's certainly one thing. And, 33 years.
It's a long time, yes. But we benefit from that experience as well. Mm-hmm. We benefit from somebody who's risen in the ranks from being a cadet in 1989, I believe, to a chief. I understand those things, but the other side of it is that we want longevity, and maybe we, the government, should be looking more carefully at work-life balance. So what can we do so that we keep a chief longer?
Mm. Well, two points about that. Considering where the nation is right now when it comes to public safety and crime, those are the kind of things some would argue that kind of come with the job. Can you ask for realistically a work-life balance from the top law enforcement officer in a city? D.C. is arguably the most powerful city in the nation. It is one of the biggest cities in the nation. Police chiefs, big and small cities, are on call all the time.
True. That doesn't mean we can't look at it and see if there's something else we can do. But the next chief is someone who I hope will be as good and will stay longer.
How do you feel about how this was handled? The reporting is that the chief told, kind of the rank and file after he told the mayor. But, after that, the information just kind of trickled out.
Well, it may have trickled out, but it kind of trickled out quickly.
Yes, a big trickle.
We found out from social media yesterday afternoon, but it was within the hour that it was confirmed. So I don't think that's horrible. But I do want to go back to the value of experience that, the chief has to have a relationship with the U.S. attorney because he or she, whoever the U.S. attorney is, prosecutes all of our felony cases. And if there are problems with policing that the U.S. attorney finds, the chief's got to have a good relationship to hear that, to get that out of the U.S. attorney's office. The chief's has to have good relationships with all of our federal partners, and I hate to put it that way because I believe in statehood, but two-thirds of our criminal justice system is federal, Bureau of Prisons, CSOSA, pretrial services, the courts. And so we start over when we get a new chief. Now, I do think that Chief Conte has tended to having a good backbench. Maybe I shouldn't say bench. And so there are our assistant chiefs who we can look at first, and maybe some commanders. And so that's all to the good. But still, these relationships have to start anew. And learning the quirks of different council members with whom the chief has to deal, or quirks of the mayor, all that has to start anew. And it sort of sets things back a little. So I said this in a statement I put out, that finding a new chief is an opportunity for a fresh face and some fresh perspective, but there's a lot of value to experience in the longevity that Robert Conte brought to the department.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking all things D.C. with the D.C. Council Chair, Phil Mendelson. If you have a comment or a question, lines are open. Give us a call. Outside of longevity, what kind of chief would you like to see in D.C. moving forward?
Preferably somebody from within the department, preferably somebody who is comfortable with the balance between working with the rank and file and working with the politicians in the Wilson Building and sometimes the politicians on Capitol Hill. That takes a special skill. Not super hard, but it takes a skill. And also someone who is interested in the latest research and understanding about the most effective ways to fight crime and reduce crime.
Where are you on the issue of police reform in the district? Do you think that that MPD is making strides and changes to your satisfaction?
I've always thought that MPD stood above other police departments around the country, and we sort of see that, unfortunately, in a lot of the news stories that have come out in the last several years. I want to say since George Floyd, but actually before George Floyd, Ferguson, for example. That doesn't mean that we're good enough, and I was comfortable in supporting the police accountability bill that the council passed in 2020, passed on a permanent version last December, and that's what's before the Hill right now, that the Hill has challenged us on. We can always look to ways, and we should always look for ways to improve police accountability. The respect that the police have from the community is critical, and that more than doubles, maybe triples, their crime-fighting effectiveness. If they don't have respect of the community, then it's just one officer is trying to figure out what happened. If they have the respect of the community, kind of reminds you of what Kathy Lanier said shortly after she became chief, that when she started as chief, there were no calls to the tip line. And trying to build community trust, there were calls to the tip line. There were witnesses. There was the ability to solve crimes. So that's what's behind the police accountability bill, is building that trust, and of course related to that, the fact that we want police officers to be protectors, not occupiers. We want them to be our friends and ones who we are comfortable with because, they're our partners, if you will.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to D.C. Council Chair Phil Mendelson about all things D.C. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Let me go to Cheryl. Cheryl is calling from Ward 7. Cheryl, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to talk about groundwater issues.
Go right ahead.
The city. I live in Ward 7. And I have, myself and my neighbors have stone walls around our yard, and they leak water out of them, and it's not D.C. water. It's not water from D.C. water, like water supplied by D.C. water. it is underground springs. It's groundwater. And it causes a lot of challenges because it leaks onto the sidewalk and into the street, and it causes black ice as well as problems for pedestrians walking down the street. But it's not water produced from our homes. It is underground springs, and the ANC in our area was working with DDOT, and they were supposed to come out and fix it in FY22, but no one ever showed up. Luckily, our winter wasn't too harsh, so we only had a couple of instances where the street iced over, but nevertheless, a very dangerous thing. So I wanted to know, what can I do about this as a resident of the district?
Well, my office can try to be an advocate for you. Call my office at 724-8032.
Say that again, please, that number, please.
724-8032. We have, from time to time, worked with residents who've had problems with groundwater, such as you're experiencing in alleys or on sidewalks. You mentioned it's flowing into the street. And, you know, there's sometimes DC Water has to find out whether it's theirs, and you're saying that's already been done, and then sometimes you have to argue with DDOT, but we're willing to try to help you on this. In the end, it's up to DDOT, but we're willing to help. So call my office.
Cheryl, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tish calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes. This is Tish calling from D.C.
Go ahead.
I just was listening to the councilman. The job for the chief seems to be more political than what I thought the chief's job is. The city has changed. I used to see police walking the beat, you know, more presence of the police and, you know, on foot. I don't see that as often probably in the last 5 years or probably before COVID. There were a lot of police more present in the community. I don't see that anymore. So I don't know. But listening to the councilman or just what the chief's job is, I never heard anything related to the community. So I'm sure there's other people in place that will probably, you know, do what they're supposed to do when it comes to the community.
But well, Tish, let me see what the council chairman has to say about that. It's an interesting question because the chief did kind of talk about that spring-summer initiative today.
But well, please. I did talk about building community trust, and I didn't talk specifically about foot patrols. I like foot patrols. A lot of folks do. It's relationship building, and there's a value to that. So, yes, the chief has a more political job because he's got to interact on behalf of the department with the council, which has oversight, the mayor, who's a political figure, the Congress, unfortunately, because they like to involve themselves. So there are political aspects to it. But I've said this before. I want a chief who also is well-versed in the latest thinking about strategies for reducing crime. But that should always include trust building with the community. And trust building with the community means that cops get out of their car, that they walk the beat, or that they come to community meetings. It's called community policing.
Yeah. Tish, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I don't want to do too much dwelling on the police chief issue, but certainly this is important. And you just mentioned oversight. Next month, the chief and the mayor are going to be speaking to the House Oversight and Accountability Committee. Arguably, some could say that now the Republican-led House is, you know, particularly hostile to the district as it relates to all things D.C.
Yeah.
What do you expect to hear from, or what do you hope to hear, I should say, from the mayor and the chief?
Well, what I hope is that the mayor and the chief will present to the members of Congress that the district is safe, that the district is a good place to live, that the district is being well run, because there's a narrative among the House Republicans that the district is a lawless, like Dodge City, that we don't know how to run the city. I'm actually pretty fed up with their hypocrisy, and I said something about it at a committee meeting today at the council.
Hold that point, if you will, Mr. Chairman, because I do have to take a break, and I want to hear what you have to say and finish that particular point, because the way you're expressing is something that a lot of Washingtonians really, really feel mm-hmm. about what they're hearing from Capitol Hill. So I will let you finish your point. Also, we're going to hear from Paul. We're going to hear from Luann and Robert. So please do not hang up. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. We are talking to D.C. Council Chair Phil Mendelson. Stay with us. The Quiet Storm is next with John Mons. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking all things D.C. with D.C. Council Chair Phil Mendelson. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mr. Chairman, finish your point. We were talking about this relationship between the Republican-led House and their thoughts about D.C. as we move toward this oversight committee hearing.
So what we're seeing, and I hate to put it in partisan terms, but it is the Republicans in the House who are leading this charge, if you will, against the district. It's, in my view, not really about the district, but about scoring political points nationally. I think that's what was behind their motive in challenging two bills from the council this year. But what really has me galled today is that when I testified before the House Oversight Committee just a few weeks ago, they were so upset that we had, quote, defunded, unquote, the police 3 years ago when we reduced its budget by $9 million. This week, Speaker McCarthy pushed through the House on a 217 to 215 vote a proposed budget that would cut by 22% the public safety agencies that are federal in the district. So, CSOSA is a federal agency, oversees returning citizens in the district. The U.S. Attorney, federal office, prosecutes all of our felony cases pursuant to Congress. The courts, Superior Court, is funded by the federal government. Those three agencies combined over $100 million in cuts if Speaker McCarthy gets his way. But 3 weeks ago, we cut the MPD to police budget by $9 million. That was less than 1% 3 years ago. And they were really trying to embarrass the district over this 3 weeks ago. And then you turn right around and propose to cut these agencies. If the U.S. We have a problem right now. The U.S. Attorney is declining roughly two-thirds of the arrests that the MPD brings to them. And the U.S. Attorney is going to prosecute more cases if we cut their budget by 22%? I don't think so. So that's what I was going to say. It's just the hypocrisy. But in my view, we weather this storm, and I will... Anytime Congress wants to hear from me, I'll go before them and answer the questions. I think they're hoping to do to the mayor what they were hoping to do to me when I went before them, and that is to have me embarrass myself or have me embarrass the city. I don't think the mayor's going to do that. I don't think the chief's going to do that. So I think it'll kind of backfire on them.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, the mayor, the chief, and to be quite honest, just about anyone who speaks, for the District of Columbia or defends the District of Columbia, on Capitol Hill, they have tough skin, and they give as good as they get.
Yeah.
So we will certainly have to continue to pay attention to that. Let me go to Robert. Robert, calling from Ward 8. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you for taking a call.
Sure.
First thing when Councilman was saying about having a chief that can balance work and that. The only problem with that, sir, is that crime don't balance. Crime comes at all hours. So I understand his frustration being former law enforcement, but not supervisor. All things fall on the chief. And the second thing was the program that they were going to implement. I just want to know who and how they're going to hold them accountable and who are they going to help it's going to be just police officers talking, or they're going to have a team of people also talking and interact with the community.
You said the program. What program are you speaking about?
No, I'm speaking about what they're going to implement this summer.
Oh, I see. Yeah, the anti-crime right. initiative this summer.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you implement this, because unfortunately, I see more police in their cars than actually interacting.
Yeah.
We all see it. That's not a hidden secret. And then before you have them interact, are they going to get some classes on how to interact? Because just passing the academy doesn't make you a sociable officer, because a lot of them have simple skills they're lacking, such as communicating, understanding, and not classifying, just being able to know and break that little barrier.
Let me see what the chairman has to say about that. I mean, he kind of touched on this earlier, but Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with the suggestion at the academy that the training is not helpful. I think it's very helpful. I've long been a supporter that police officers are individuals who should have some college education, and ideally that they're interested in just some of the theories and science around law enforcement and criminology. But yes, they also need social skills and de-escalation training. That's part of what's in the police accountability bill is training and de-escalation, training about white supremacy, about racism. You know, put those, we're not afraid in the district of approaching uncomfortable subjects, and that needs to be a part of the training with the police, because I said this before, building relationships, positive relationships with the community is critical to effective policing.
Robert, thank you so much for your phone call. Let me quickly go to Paul. Paul calling from D.C. Paul, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much, Brian. I'm an ANC commissioner for ABO2, and our chief of, you know, Middleton is out of touch, okay? And they giving a bunch of excuses. It's unacceptable, okay? They know they have a major problem with crime. They know they have a major problem with the violence in the District of Columbia. And for them to have the audacity, Charles Allen and the rest of them, to present legislation that does not really apply to what is really going on. If that was your child, your daughter, your family member, you wouldn't want to hear what they're talking about, okay? All you're doing is saying, what are y'all doing? The mayor is out of contact, okay? We've lost another chief of staff. Conti has resigned, okay? Because for whatever reason, he said he's going to the FBI. Conti has resigned. So now we got to prepare ourselves for another commissioner or chief to come in here and say, get control of our city.
Well, before I have the chairman answer your comments, you know, Paul, because it's always very, very easy to criticize. What, briefly, if you can, share with us what you believe the best solution might be for...
I've suggested to the mayor since 2015. Thank you, Brian, for asking that
and,
question.
And it's Harold, but please go right ahead.
Harold.
Yeah.
Thank you for asking that question. I have suggested to the mayor, will she not return plain clothing? What the plain clothing will do is combat the traffic, you know, the sex trafficking, the laundering, the drugs, and everything else.
Well, let me see if the chairman has a brief thought about that, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, my thought kind of goes a little differently, and that's that what I think the mayor needs to do is sit down with the chief and say, what do you need to close more cases? Because so many crimes are committed by repeat offenders. What do you need to close more cases? The closure rate is not as high as it should be, or we think it is. Robberies... last year of robberies committed last year, 25%, maybe 30% were solved. within the year. What do you need to close more cases? That makes a difference. And then go to the U.S. attorney. What do you need, or what can we do to get you to prosecute more of these cases and not plea bargain a felony to a misdemeanor, or to plea bargain a serious felony like armed carjacking to something like carrying a pistol without a license, which is a much lesser offense in terms of seriousness. That's what I would do, as well as I've said several times, improving community relations. I think those strategies will make a difference.
Paul, thank you so much for your phone call. Luann, I'm going to come to you in a bit. Hang on. But I did want to, you know, talk, Mr. Chairman, about some other issues. Obviously, you know, one of the biggest other issues is, you know, the D.C. budget. Housing just seems to be, you know, a really tumultuous topic where you're talking about, you know, affordable housing as well as, you know, what to do about the, you know, the office buildings downtown, what the, you know, what the city's, you know, housing department, you know, is doing. How would you characterize where the city is right now, particularly when, you know, it looks like we're going to have budget shortfalls for the next several years?
Well, I think the financial situation for the district is not as dire as some people have interpreted it to be. Yes, our revenues have declined, but that is the amount of growth is less than we thought it was, not that we actually have less money. But, you know, it was only a couple of years ago that we had to cut $1.5 billion out of our budget because of the COVID recession. So this is not as dire as that. I just say that because you made the comment about that we may be struggling for the next several years. Mm-hmm. We do need to get the federal government to come back and more people to be downtown. I don't think the answer is a long-term answer about promoting development, but rather a short-term answer about public safety, making people feel safe when they go into our neighborhoods or go downtown, and also looking for strategies to activate, that is, bring more people, like more activity with the arts, more street festivals, looking to take vacant retail space and populate it with some activity to bring people into the... Those are strategies that are short-term that I think will work. The budget that we have is not a pretty budget. The mayor cut programs across the board and a lot of programs that are very important to what I'll call social justice programs, like our emergency rental assistance program to help stabilize folks who are on the brink of losing their homes, access to justice, which provides money for legal services through nonprofits, legal services to indigent folks who have been denied benefits they're probably entitled to or who are facing eviction in landlord-tenant court. I've been struggling, but today I was persuaded the council to approve some changes to the budget so that our schools will not be cut next year. I need to state that more clearly. Every school that was told last month by the mayor or the chancellor that they're going to be cut next year will not be. We've restored the funding to every one of those schools. So schools will get the same or more money next year than they got this year. And that means that we're not going to have to be laying off teachers, or schools won't have to be laying off teachers or social workers or classroom aides. That stability will go a long way.
But how did you do that? Without getting too much down into, the weeds, but, you know, if the mayor, you know, said cut, convinced the council to restore those funds, as you, in your own words, okay, so we may not have the kind of growth, but
a simplistic answer. So almost every agency got cut. Mm-hmm. Public education grew. DCPS grew by, if I remember correctly, $80 million. And yet, no, I think it was less than that. Maybe it was $70 million that DCPS grew, but 80 schools saw a cut to their budget. So the simplistic answer is I shifted resources from central back to the schools.
Hmm.
Now, I'm oversimplifying, mm-hmm. but that's basically how we did that. And we also increased the funding for schools that have high concentrations of at-risk students. So a school that has 40% or more of its students who are at risk, which roughly correlates to poverty, they'll get even more resources.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. Luann calling from D.C. Thanks for calling and being patient with us. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. Hi. Good evening, Mr. Fisher and Chairman Mendelson. This is Luann. I'm a Ward 8 resident. Been over here for about 5, maybe 7 years now. I'm listening in, and given the current circumstances at hand with the chief, of course, resigning for the work-life balance, I'm wondering if there is a task force that strategically you can bring in, and I'm talking about the ANC commissioners, the community outreach liaisons, and whoever, you know, that you all can pull together, because we don't want a lag gap in decision making for, you know, bringing in somebody as an interim. You have the summer youth that's coming. You have the carjacking that's still going on. You still have the gun violence. Up here right on Alabama Avenue, you have the trafficking. I've already contacted DDOT, where everybody now is stopping in front of the CVS that can cause accidents, violence. You have the bikers who just ride up and down D.C., you know, and, like, taking over the streets. So you don't want to see all this thing. We got to try to combat it in bringing in someone as soon as possible, even if the interim. But I would recommend strategically bringing in all of your task force, all of your community liaison. Right now, you don't want to leave anybody out in decision-making for this process while you all make a decision on an interim, you know, chief. Because we need the safety, we need protection, and we do need that assistance now. And I would recommend that you all do this task force effective tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Don't lag. It's just your political party.
Well, Luann, let's see what the chairman has to say about that.
Well, I think consulting with the community is a good thing. But the mm-hmm. decision about an interim chief and nominating a permanent chief is entirely the mayor's. The council's role is simply to confirm, which the council will have a hearing when the mayor proposes a nominates a permanent chief. We don't have a hearing. We don't have a role with the interim.
Yeah. Luann, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. Luann just mentioned something that I was also going to discuss, and this goes along with issues regarding, you know, transportation. She talked about bike lanes taking over. First and foremost, and this is already certainly a done deal, but, you know, Minnesota Avenue, for example, is extremely crowded with, you know, with the bike lanes, and then we have issues with the buses, and the like. There was an article in the Washington Post just this morning talking about this K Street bus project and, that versus free bus rides. Your thoughts about, you know, just what's happening with, you know, with the bike lanes and the K Street project and, as I just said, the free bus lanes. I mean, the free bus.
This is going to get me in trouble, but the free bus service, I'm all for. I think that's a game changer in terms of improving public transit. It will improve the frequency of buses, but bus service, that's going to help a whole lot of folks in this city. And one reason we'll increase the frequency is I think we'll see more riders, and therefore we'll need more buses. But also, you no longer have the delay of people at a bus stop, a large number of people getting on and trying to figure out how to pay their fare, you know, reach into their wallet. And then we also have a problem, which is a different problem, and that is fare jumping. That'll go away. The free bus service I support that. And I was pretty angry at the mayor for unfunding it. If it had been her idea last fall, believe me, she'd be pushing it real hard. And you mentioned the bike lanes.
Yeah.
I think the city needs to step back and look at this more carefully. I'm hearing increasing resentment from folks. And ultimately, we want to share the road. We don't want to make the road so difficult for automobiles. I see a lot of bike lanes where I don't see enough bicyclists. I certainly want to encourage bicycling. It's a different mode. It's also not a mode for a whole lot of people. They're just, most people are not going to be getting on bicycles. And so I think we need to, we, meaning the Department of Transportation and works for the mayor, needs to step back and kind of make sure that we've got the right balance in place. Now, with regard to Minnesota Avenue, I got to tell you, it's an adventure every time I drive down Minnesota Avenue these days, because I can't quite tell whether the lane is two lanes, one lane. It's kind of like suddenly I'm going to the right, maybe I'm going to the left. I've got to watch out for this concrete curb that's in the middle of the, one of the lanes that wasn't there before. I'm hopeful the DDOT knew what it was doing when it planned this, and if the criticism bears out to be true, which is that emergency vehicles aren't going to be able to get down Minnesota Avenue very quickly, or that there are going to be accidents from cars driving into these curbs, then DDOT's going to need to rethink this.
What about the, you know, the K Street bus plan, the bus lane only? From observation, if buses are going to be about the business of moving people as they do, some would argue that, you know, they need to be able to navigate freely, particularly in the more congested parts, you know, of the city. But this may very well come down to money.
Well, the K Street busway is a very, very expensive project. It was designed roughly 10 years ago. A lot has changed since then. Right now, businesses along K Street are saying, we don't want this. We're struggling to keep tenants. And the last thing we need is a major disruption to K Street for the couple years it would take to tear everything up and rebuild. Think about other projects that have happened from time to time where the sidewalks are fenced off or narrowed and the street's under complete reconstruction, and it hurts retail businesses. We want to revitalize downtown, and I think making it more difficult for the next couple of years, the timing is just wrong. So what folks have said to me is the project was based on 10-year-old dynamics that are no longer at work, and that this is the wrong time to be doing it. So I'm very comfortable with the action that the council took today. This is not the final decision to pull back on K Street.
Before I go back to the phone lines, I wanted to ask you about something that you said earlier. You were talking about having the federal government bring their employees back. And even though certainly, you know, the old name Federal City, that I heard when, you know, I was a kid. But I will tell you, and this is anecdotally speaking, I have a lot of friends who work for the federal government. I have a lot of friends who work for in the private sector in the District of Columbia who, you know, were forced to stay at home because of the pandemic. To a person, none of them want to come back downtown. It's not about coming back down to downtown D.C., they don't want to come back to any city because they've become so used to working at home. If, with that being the case, for the sake of argument, what's D.C. to do if people are just so resistant to coming back?
Well, this is a struggle that private sector is having. We see it with some of the businesses, large companies that are struggling with getting their workforce come back to work. I'm struggling with it at the council. Frankly, I think that most work benefits from the interaction, the informal contacts that happen at work, people working together. So I get it that there are folks who feel like they were more productive working at home, and in many ways they probably were more productive working at home. And then there are other folks who've figured out that they can live in Barcelona, Spain, and have a job in D.C. And that may be true for some jobs. But for the most part, the value of an office is the interaction, the informal contacts. I'm noticing this with council meetings. We allow Right now, we're allowing what we call hybrid meetings, so a council member can participate online or they can be in person. And a majority of the council is showing up in person because there's something. There are conversations that happen, spontaneous, and we benefit from that. So I think we're going to see it's going to take a few years. I'm speaking very generally now. It's going to take a few years for all this to sort itself out and what makes the most sense, and it's going to vary from business to business. But in terms of Washington, D.C. and our downtown, the federal government is the largest employer, and it needs to come back to work. We need its folks downtown and other businesses. So I don't want to say this is only about the federal government. This is not about federal and our being a federal city. No, this is about our downtown as a business district, and we need our workers to come back.
Let me go to Kevin, calling from D.C. Kevin, real quick, what's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call, and sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad we came up with the conversation of workers. Here's the issue. In D.C., we have a lot of D.C. government workers that work the street. They clean, they pick up trash, they pick up leaves, they do the highways. Now, you got people been doing this for 5-6 years who temporary jobs, but they were still applying to become permanent workers in the District of Columbia. We just set up bank accounts. We got our kids back in our lives. We pay rent. We pay mortgage. We set up our lives. Here's what happened within the last 2 to 3 years.
Real quick, Kevin, make your point real quick, please.
What about the workers who got fired in the Washington, D.C. area because of this building block program that you're giving jobs to the youth when you had people out here doing the jobs for 5 or 6 years? You just let them go back to the streets. Credit all messed up. When we're speaking about programs for the youth, what about the programs for the adults who sat right here and held this city down for 5 to 6 years during the pandemic, after the pandemic, the reemergence of the pandemic, and the downfall of the pandemic? What do you say to those workers who was fired in the District of Columbia Department of Public Works?
Well, let me see what the chairman has to say about that, Kevin. I'm not familiar. I don't know if you...
No, I've not heard very much of this. But what the caller started by saying was that there were folks who were hired on a temporary basis. And I'm a strong believer in what we call continuing full-time. These are folks who become civil service. And so after a couple of years, the city can't just say, well, you know, we don't want you anymore, and kick you to the curb. There's civil service protections if you're continuing full-time. And I'm not quite sure why DPW was hiring folks on a temporary or term basis, and it sounds like that was the problem.
Okay, Kevin, thank you so much for your phone call. I only have a little bit of time left, but you wanted to talk briefly about baby bonds. Explain to our listeners what that is and your position on that, because this, it's an important thing.
Yeah, this was an initiative that actually came from Councilmember Kenya McDuffie a couple years ago, and we were able to find funding and put it in place. There's been an effort to try this on a federal level. Cory Booker has been a leader for this. Congress hasn't approved it yet. It's a strategy for wealth building. And a kid born in poverty in the district, so you have to be a resident of the district, and you have to be born in poverty, and that means, for instance, your family's on Medicaid or food stamps. That kid, if he or she stays in the district for 18 years, every year the city will put $1,000 into an account. It accrues interest, and at the age of 18, they have this pot of money, and they can use it. It's limited in how it can be used. It can be used for college education or to start a job. I think there are a couple other uses. It's all about wealth building. We fully funded it. The chief financial officer screwed up and didn't reflect that it was funded through the financial plan. The mayor would just said, hey, it's not funded every year, even though if she'd been her folk budget folks knew it was. And so she cut the program completely. And Councilmember McDuffie has been struggling to get that program funded. He founded funding for it. And there's been some criticism because we have short-term needs. Well, this is a long-term investment. And if we are never mindful of long-term investments, that is, what can take a kid born today in poverty, where 18 years from now he or she has a chance that never had before. We need long-term strategies as part of our portfolio of dealing with people who are in poverty. It can't all just be short-term, just short-term programs.
And real quick, before we wrap things up, as you know, it seems like we're getting closer and closer to the sale of the Washington Commanders. Virginia still wants the team. Maryland wants to keep the team. Where do you fall on bringing the Commanders to Washington again?
I have no problem with the Commanders coming back to D.C. If the proposal is the RFK site, a majority of the council said they don't think that's the place for it. That stadium, I mean, that site, there isn't potential for economic development around that site. It's adjacent to the Anacostia River
and
parkland.
And a community, yeah.
Yeah, so, but there may be other locations. If you want the city to pay for it, we're struggling right now. I just was talking about baby bonds, emergency rental assistance. It's not like we got tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars for another stadium mm-hmm. that will compete against the stadium we already own, which is the baseball stadium, compete in a sense of non-sporting events that might be there. Depends on what the question is. But just whether the Commanders should come back, that would be great.
D.C. Council Chair Phil Mendelson, thank you very much for this wide-ranging conversation. We will continue to stay in touch. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you, Harold.
That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, April 27th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.